This is Kathy coming to you with the first part of the Decatur Herald and Review for Wednesday, July the 8th. Headline reads, U.S. soccer fans pack the Devon. Jenny Gibbon, the picture of all these people sitting in lawn chairs out on a grassy lawn, mostly decked out in red, white, and blue, of some sort, either stars, but it all looks very patriotic. And it says, Jenny Gibbons cheers with a crowd of about 800 as the United States team scores a goal during the World Cup watch party on Monday, July 6th, at the Devon Lakeshore Amphitheater in Decatur. The headline says, big screen, big crowd, big pride, back the team in the World Cup by Danette Beckett. Decatur's Mid-State Soccer Club teammates, Brooklyn Haven's 10, Olive Smith and Kennedy Lynch, both 11, dressed all in red, white, and blue, ready to cheer on the United States men's national soccer team during the FIFA World Cup game against Belgium. It's a really big deal, Kennedy said Monday night. Although they could have seen the game in their own homes, the girls wanted to meet with their friends and other fans to watch what turned out to be the final game for the U.S. team. The season ended for the American team with a score of 1-4. The Devon Lakeshore Amphitheater management had the same idea as the young fans. Shortly after the first games of Round 16 were announced, soccer fans were invited to a watch party at the Nelson Park venue. We felt like it would be more fun to watch it with their friends and other kiddos that they play soccer with, said Kennedy's mom, Shannon Lynch. And being able to watch a big game on a big screen is more fun. Susan Keene, manager of concessions and beverages for the Devon Amphitheater, is a soccer fan. And what a better way to celebrate the birthday of America but to get people together, she said. The idea came to Keene after the U.S. team won last week. She contacted Dustin Bradshaw, the Devon's general manager, shortly after the win with the possibility of hosting a watch party. You obviously have to be licensed to show the game, she said. It's all legal. The Devon Amphitheater posted the event on social media on Sunday, the day before the international matchup. According to Bradshaw, approximately 800 fans joined the free watch party. Although he was excited to bring the community together for the game, Bradshaw said he had never sat through a soccer game before. My kids had played in a school league, but as for professional soccer, I've never watched, he said. The Devon staff provided many of the same amenities as they would for a concert, including concessions and security. We have the same rules regardless of what event we're going to have going on, Bradshaw said. It's just a watch party together. Former Mid-State soccer director and previous semi-professional Scottish soccer player Colin Bonner was among the crowd of fans, but today I'm American, he said. The idea of bringing soccer fans together was on Bonner's mind as well. On Monday night, there was no show at the Devon, he said, and it's a nice night. Bonner and other fans were ready to meet at local restaurants or bars to watch the game, but the outdoor venue was more inviting for families, he pointed out. Everybody's getting into it, he said. It's national pride. Kip McDaniel, current director of the Mid-State Soccer Club, added, this brings the kids out. He said he was impressed by the other fans who showed up for the watch party. I don't like what just happened in the first 10 minutes of the game, he said, after the Belgian team scored their first point. But yes, I'm happy about this. Although the fans filled the Devon seats, several of the local young soccer players spent their time playing in the lawn section of the venue. Being able to play something that you're good at and to be with your friends, we have fun, Kennedy said. We hang out with friends and meet new people, Brooklyn added. It's just for fun. Along with glitter sprinkled on their faces, the girls wore the jersey of their favorite women's national soccer team player, Sophia Smith. It's a really good experience to play with your friends, Olive said. You meet new people, and you learn about different people. There are people you can relate to, Kennedy said. During halftime, teenagers joined in a quick game. We cut our practice short just for this game, said Nick Brooks, 17, who plays on the Moroa Forsyth team. Some of the halftime players acknowledged they knew little about the sport. I don't know anything about soccer, said Van Cunningham, 16. I'm just patriotic. Although the fans wished for a better outcome, the loss was not surprising for some. This is unfortunately a commonplace for the journey to end for our U.S. men's national team, said Krista Carr. It was super exciting to think they might get a little bit further. However, the atmosphere wasn't all negative. The positive side is seeing how many people in the community love and appreciate soccer and the world stage that our soccer players got to play on, Carr said. Hopefully it inspires a generation, like my son, to aspire to be on the same stage at some point. It's just fun to see the good players play, no matter the outcome, said 13-year-old Adam Carr, and I love the big screen. Next headline reads, City OKs Lead Pipe Overhaul Program, an EPA grant to cover costs of replacing at-risk residential lines by Tony Reed. Getting the lead out just got a whole lot less expensive for Decatur residents. The Decatur City Council voted Monday to upgrade its reimbursement program for homes and businesses looking to get rid of drinking water supply pipes that might be at risk from lead contamination. Now, after this vote, the city will pay 100% of the costs to replace such at-risk lines serving private homes if they are leaking, covering bills up to $6,000. For leaking commercial lines, the coverage goes up to $10,000. Previously, the city had only paid 50% of the bill. For residential water lines that aren't leaking, but the homeowner voluntarily requests replacement, the city will continue to cover 50% of the bill up to $3,000. For commercial customers who make similar requests, the city will pay 50% up to a total of $5,000. In a memo to councilors, City Manager Melissa Hahn said the city's sudden wellspring of generosity was made possible by enhanced grant funding from the Illinois Environmental Protection Agency. The city was recently informed that the Illinois EPA received additional funding from the U.S. EPA for lead service removal, Hahn told the council. This added funding has provided for the IEPA to increase their 50% loan forgiveness to 100%, or over $4 million for the current 2026 lead service removal project and the proposed 2027 lead service removal project. Hahn said the state regulators have given Decatur 10 years to dig up and remove all possibly lead-contaminated services beginning in 2027. Decatur has no all-lead pipes in the 532 miles of its water mains and some 29,368 water service lines pumping water to homes and businesses. What it does have, however, are some lead goosenecks, flexible lead pipes used to connect rigid galvanized steel pipes to water mains that were installed before 1945. Surveys of the city's water system reveal more than 6,300 water lines need to be fixed to guard against the risk of lead or lead exposure. The way the reimbursement program works for pipes on private property is that homeowners and businesses hire plumbers to do the work, and the city pays the bill or its share of it. The city first introduced its policy to replace privately owned water lines at risk from lead in 2023 in wake of requirements from regulators to take action to get all lead out of drinking water systems. City statistics show in 2024, 52 leaking service lines were replaced and 5 others replaced at the request of the customer, adding up to a total bill of $110,167. In 2025, there were 86 leaking replacements and 6 requested replacements, costing $179,088. And so far in 2026, there have been 30 leaking replacements and no requested replacements for a cost of $63,266. No councilors had a problem with getting the lead out, although Councilman Dennis Cooper said he wanted to remove the word leaking from the language, deciding who gets 100% of the replacement bill paid. If the pipes need to be changed out, then we change them out, whether there is a leak or not, he said. And how are citizens going to know if there's a leak? It may be leaking, and they never know it's leaking. Mayor Julie Wolf Moore asked if the leaking provision was just to establish a priority system for those with more pressing problems. The city manager said that, yes, that was the idea. We get about 100 of those cases per year, Hahn added. She said customers whose old pipes are still sound, but nevertheless want to jump the line to get replacements installed sooner, will be covered at 50% of the cost. But if they want to wait until we get around to their area of pipe replacement, it would still be covered at 100% because that is required with the grant funding, Hahn said. Councilor David Horn welcomed the increased payments and said it will encourage more people to come forward and use the program. I think it's very important that Decatur is moving forward with reimbursing the costs for residential and commercial privately owned lead water services, he added. The vote to approve the increased reimbursement passed unanimously. Pritzker OK's landmark AI regulations from Illinois, Maggie Daugherty, the Capital News Service. Governor J.B. Pritzker signed artificial intelligence legislation modeled after similar bills in California and New York on Monday, furthering a push for state-driven national framework in lieu of federal regulations. Congress and the president ought to be passing similar legislation, but they've so far been unwilling because many are captive to special interests that profit from the industry having no regulation, Pritzker said before signing the bill. We can work together to establish thoughtful guardrails in ways that benefit both industry and the public, or we can allow a handful of actors to evade accountability and push the costs and detriment onto ordinary people. Illinois has chosen our path. Senate Bill 315, also known as the Artificial Intelligence Safety Measures Act, increases transparency and accountability requirements for the largest artificial intelligence models, those that generate more than $500 million in annual revenue and are trained using massive computing power. The bill mirrors California's SB 53 and New York's Responsible AI Safety and Education Act, which were each signed in late 2025. It establishes new reporting standards for the possibility that the AI model could be used for large-scale harms, such as by providing users assistance in creating a chemical, biological, or nuclear weapon or committing cyber attacks. Senate sponsor Senator Mary Edie Allen, Democrat of Libertyville, said there is an urgency for states to protect against those potential harms. We are not willing to wait for Congress to act, Edie Allen said. There's an old saying, give a man a fish, he eats for a day. But if you teach him to fish, he eats for a lifetime. Teach AI to fish, though, and it might just empty the whole river trying to figure it out. Though the three states only account for roughly 20% of the national populace, lawmakers estimate that they represent roughly 40% of the U.S. AI market, effectively creating a de facto national standard. New guardrails. The new law requires model developers to publish an AI framework outlining how the developer identifies and assesses catastrophic risk, defined as the likelihood that incidents that could cause death or serious injury to more than 50 people or more than $1 million in property damage. Developers will also be required to report any incidents that could cause harm to the state within 72 hours of identifying the incident, or 24 hours if it poses an imminent risk for death or serious physical injury. The bill's House sponsor, Representative Daniel Dietich, Democrat of Buffalo Grove, said the harms the bill will regulate are not theoretical. We have already seen the first AI-inspired mass shooting. We've already seen AI systems utilized to attack a municipal water and drainage utility, Dietich said. He also alluded to the example of Anthropic's Mythos model, which the company said was too powerful a cyber weapon to be released to the public. Anthropic supported Illinois' bill and had representatives present at the signing on Monday. Every transformative technology in our history, from automobiles to electricity to air travel, has delivered enormous benefits while carrying real risks. And in every case, the government responded not by banning the technology and not by taking a hands-off approach, but by building safeguards so everyday people can trust that these technologies are safe, Dietich said. Illinois' version, similar in most ways to the standards set in New York and California, as a first-in-the-nation requirement for mandatory annual third-party audits. New York's version only required a single independent audit at the time when developers became large enough to qualify under the law. During debate in the General Assembly, the third-party audit provision was a point of contention for some industry stakeholders, including TechNet, a coalition of tech executives across the industry. We remain concerned that Illinois would effectively be requiring private actors to make highly subjective determinations requiring AI safety compliance without established national standards, certifications, or clear regulatory guardrails, TechNet Representative Nina Linero said in a committee May 20th. OpenAI and Anthropic both supported the bill on its path through the Illinois General Assembly, and it passed with broad bipartisan support in both chambers. Only 5 Republican senators voted against it, and it passed unanimously in the House. Though the large developers pushed for a federal framework rather than what they were concerned would be an inconsistent patchwork of state regulations, Caitlin Niedermeyer of OpenAI's Global Affairs told the Senate's AI and Social Media Committee in April that OpenAI was open to a coordinated state-driven approach. While we have been very clear that the federal government remains well-positioned to lead on frontier safety because it has the resources, expertise, and institutions, we also strongly actually see a position for both Illinois, but also California and New York, to really lead in advancing aligned frameworks, which we believe can absolutely help create a de facto national direction of travel, Niedermeyer told the committee. And what's on the AI horizon? Companies that violate it will be subject to civil penalties brought by the Attorney General's office of up to $1 million for the first offense and up to $3 million for subsequent violations. But lawmakers and advocates say they expect to continue working on the topic of AI in the future. For example, DIDIC-identified medical care and education is likely frontiers needing further evaluation of AI's public safety risks. Scott Weiser, Policy Director for Secure AI, was one of the advocates helping to shape Illinois' bill. Having more external evaluation of the risks the models pose and make judgments on when they're ready for release would be the next step for further transparency and accountability, he said. Right now, the evaluation in this bill is, are you complying with your safety framework? Because suppose you had a safety framework, just like, we're going to do A, B, C, and D, you do that, the evaluator confirms it, and yet it's still a risky thing to have out in the world, Weiser said. So this is a huge step forward, but I think there's more we can do. Illinois law will take effect on January 1st, 2028. And other local news, city backs phosphorus cleanup plan. The leadership of the city of Decatur found out that Soy City was most likely number one in the nation, but it's a distinction councilors would be happy to wash their hands of. A memo from the Sanitary District of Decatur, a separate organization from the city that handles wastewater treatment before it hits the Sangamon River, informed the council phosphorus levels in what that wastewater are sky high. Used as a chemical fertilizer, phosphorus pollution causes all kinds of problems, from dead zones in aquatic habitats that trigger mass fish kills to threatening human health with the growth of algae that produce poisons. As a refresher, phosphorus is a byproduct of grain processing, and the concentration of processing facilities in Decatur makes the Sanitary District of Decatur the largest single source point for phosphorus in Illinois and possibly the country, said Kent Newton, the SDD's executive director and chief financial officer who signed the memo. Newton proposed, and the councilors voted to accept at their Monday evening meeting, the sanitary district and the city enter a memorandum of understanding so they can work together on the development of a regional integrated plan for water quality. The city handles the sourcing, purification, and distribution of drinking water and removal of wastewater before SDD cleans it. SDD, which also provides water treatment for Forsyth and Mount Zion, is under the gun from both U.S. and Illinois Environmental Protection Agency to slash phosphorus levels to 1 milligram per liter of water by 2029. The size of the task is illustrated by the fact that the levels right now hover around 22 milligrams per liter. Newton, who attended Monday's council meeting, said dramatic reductions in that level will require heavy investment from the taxpayer and big industrial users like Archil Daniels Midland Company and Primient, who are billed on the amount of wastewater they produce. SDD does not currently treat the wastewater to remove nutrients, so this requirement is going to take significant effort and resources to accomplish, Newton said of the reduction in phosphorus. SDD, Archer Daniels Midland, and Primient will be spending hundreds of millions of dollars to comply with no economic return on the investment. Environmental groups from outside Decatur are pushing for even stricter limits, which will have limited benefits and cost even more. But by working together, Newton told the council that the two organizations can present a united front to tell state and federal regulators which water pollution control projects make the most sense and are affordable and doable. For example, expert consultants working for SDD say the goal of 1 milligram of phosphorus per liter is expensive, but achievable by 2029. But further requirements pushed by regulators to cut phosphorus levels to 0.5 milligrams per liter by 2035 are a bridge too far in terms of imposing even more massive costs and sheer difficulty of accomplishing it. SDD is willing to take the lead on developing the integrated plan, but we cannot accomplish this on our own and will need support from the city, Newton said. If the integrated plan fails, the residents and businesses of Decatur will spend resources as dictated by those outside the community rather than on projects that have the most impact and are coordinated to reduce large tax and fee increases from hitting residents and businesses at the same time. He got no arguments from the council, and Councilman David Horn, a biology professor at Millikan University, said the effort to cut phosphorus down to 1 milligram per liter was a major win for the Decatur environment. The Sanitary District of Decatur, which is currently releasing 4,430 pounds of phosphorus per day into the Sangamon River, Graham noted, when we go to 1 milligram per liter, that will be reduced to 275 pounds per day. So that's a decrease of well over 90% in the amount of phosphorus, and that's a huge environmental victory. But Horn said trying to hit 0.5 milligrams would add another $100 million to what already promises to be an ocean-sized bill. And he agreed with Newton there were better environmental projects that would help clean the water without having to excessively soak taxpayer wallets. Councillor Consuelo Cruz asked what happens to the phosphorus when it's extracted from the wastewater and whether it can be recycled. Newton said it can be recycled and reapplied to farm fields as fertilizer again. He said SDD plans to use a biological process to cleanse the wastewater to allow phosphorus reuse. But he said trying to get down to that level of 0.5 milligrams would mean switching to a chemical process that would prevent the extracted phosphorus from being reused. When Cruz asked what happened to that chemical slurry, Newton replied, "We don't know what would happen with it, but it probably would be in a landfill." The vote to authorize Mayor Julie Moore-Wolf to sign the Memorandum of Understanding with the SDD passed unanimously. Under the Lake Mattoon death investigation, two charged with concealing a homicide. Police said that man killed in Joliet, dismembered body parts were left in the lake by Felix Sarver. This story contains graphic content that may be disturbing to some readers. A Joliet man and woman are charged with the concealment of the homicidal death of a man whose remains were found in a freezer at a far west side residence. The investigation of the death of Dale Wayne Turner, 38, of Joliet, began on June 29th when boaters found a severed arm with a distinctive tattoo in Lake Mattoon in east central Illinois. That discovery eventually led police investigators to a residence about 175 miles north in a neighborhood of Joliet that also has a Plainfield mailing address. Special agents with Illinois State Police executed a search warrant on July 1st and found a freezer in a downstairs room. The freezer was locked, duct-taped, and covered with blanket, according to court records. Under the blanket was a reciprocating saw blade with a blood-like substance, according to a court petition on Monday by Adam Capelli, a Will County Assistant State's Attorney. There was a red blood-like drip stain from the drain hole in the corner of the freezer, Capelli said. A crime scene investigator with the Illinois State Police opened the freezer and discovered the torso, neck, and head, but no limbs, that belonged to Turner, Capelli said. The investigation has led to charges against Robin Turner, 62, the wife of Dale Wayne Turner, and James Adams, 26, who is Dale Wayne's half-brother. Robin and Adams are charged with the dismembering Dale Wayne Turner's body on June 26th and concealing his homicidal death on July 1st, according to a criminal complaint sworn by an Illinois State Police special agent. Adams invoked his Miranda rights instead of speaking to police, but he made a spontaneous statement, Capelli said. According to Capelli's petition, Adams told police, "The one thing I will say is that I did it, but I did it out of self-defense. I will tell you guys that." Robin Turner told investigators that Adams told her he had a fight with Dale Wayne Turner that led to Adams stabbing him multiple times during the fight, Capelli said. She said Adams told her he put his half-brother's body in a freezer, Capelli said. Will County State's Attorney James Glasgow's office is seeking to keep Robin and Adams in jail under the Safety Act as they await trial. Detention hearings are scheduled for Thursday and Friday. Capelli contends the statements of various witnesses claimed that Adams admitted to stabbing and killing Dale Wayne Turner. To cover up and conceal this killing, James Adams, along with Robin Turner, took extreme measures to cover up the killing and then further measures in an attempt to hide Dale Wayne's body, Capelli said. Dale Wayne's body was cut into many pieces and put into a freezer that was apparently purchased for that purpose, Capelli said. Robin and Adams pose a real and present danger to the community and to a key witness who called 911 when he learned of what Adams had done, Capelli said. On June 28th, recreational boaters on Lake Mattoon discovered part of a human arm, and staff with the Illinois Department of Natural Resources found multiple black trash bags filled with human remains the next day, Capelli said. The bags were taped closed and also contained a 5-pound weights or concrete, Capelli said. The body parts were identifiable through tattoos of the following: a skeleton holding a Green Bay Packers helmet, the phrase "laugh or cry" with two theater masks, and a Chicago Bears ball cap, according to Capelli. One of the hands had a ring that said "Dale with the heart robin," Capelli said. The following is a timeline of the allegations of the evidence gathered during the Illinois State Police investigation, as described in Capelli's petition. June 19th, Robin Turner said she bought a freezer from a Best Buy in Plainfield because the old freezer had broken. June 21st, Robin Turner said Dale Wayne Turner and Adams had a verbal argument about sports cards. Robin said she was away from the residence at the time. When she came back, she smelled a faint odor of bleach cleaner. June 22nd, Robin Turner was texting someone named James, who was asking her about obtaining Dolly's carpet cleaner and using bleach. "If it starts to smell a bit funny," Robin texted, "be sure to fully delete everything." June 23rd, Robin Turner and James Adams were seen on video from a Menards store in Crest Hill, buying about 20 bags of concrete and miscellaneous items. June 26th, a license plate reader spotted a pickup truck registering to Robin Turner and Adams in Mattoon. June 30th, Illinois State Police agents used license plate readers to find the pickup truck in Naperville. They followed the vehicle to Munster, Indiana, and then back to Ruth Fitzgerald Drive residence in Joliet. During the evening of June 30th, Illinois State Police received a call from the Joliet Police Department about a 911 caller claiming Robin Taylor and Adams spoke about the killing and dismemberment of Dale Wayne Turner, Capelli said. The caller, who is a relative of Robin Turner and Adams, was interviewed by police. The relative told police about traveling with Robin Turner and Adams on June 30th to Indiana, where Robin spent about $500 on fireworks, Capelli said. After traveling back home, they watched the TV series Landman, and Adams paused the show because he had news to tell, the relative, Capelli said. The relative reported Adams and Robin Turner said about 2 weeks ago, Dale Wayne Turner entered the residence and became violent with Robin and Adams, Capelli said. The relative said they were told Adams grabbed a knife and stabbed Dale Wayne Turner several times, Capelli said. Robin Turner and Adams told the relative they were unsure of what to do and mentioned dismembering the body of Dale Wayne and stashing him in a freezer, Capelli said. The relative recalled being told Robin Turner and Adams spent about 4 hours cleaning up the bloodstains, and they took several body parts to a lake where they were disposed of. The relative called 911 after leaving the residence, Capelli said. In this article, Firms Shift to Cheaper, Smaller AI Models, by Aditya Sanye from Reuters. Silicon Valley's powerful and pricey AI models have been a necessity for businesses looking to future-proof themselves, but now a growing number of tech CEOs are arguing that cheaper options would be crucial for their wider adoption. Top executives such as Microsoft's Satya Nadella, Palo Alto Networks' Nikesh Arora, and Coinbase Global's Brian Armstrong said smaller, cheaper models can handle a big share of the corporate needs. This view is the result of a reassessment within companies that until recently encouraged heavy use of AI tools, often treating rising consumption as a proxy for production, dubbed token maxing. Now those bills are starting to bite. Prices of tokens, the units used to measure AI usage, are falling, but the cost of completing a task is rising as AI firms shift from flat subscriptions to usage-based pricing. That is leaving companies with unpredictable and often higher bills as usage per task becomes harder to estimate. Uber, for instance, burned through its entire 2026 AI budget in 4 months after employees rushed to adopt AI coding tools, forcing management to cap usage, according to reports. Changing the license model caught a lot of people by surprise, said Harold Bayan, CEO of BlueRock, a startup that helps companies run AI systems safely. Immediately after that, we had a number of reports from customers that were seeing a 20 to 30% spike in terms of over-budgeting. As companies use AI more, their costs are surging beyond initial estimates, as tasks now involve more steps, more data, and more input. And I think I will stop right there. That's the end of part one of the Decatur Herald in Review. Be back in a minute with part two.